Every single time, the police are very confused about what's happening because it's not an actual crime. So they never respond to anything.
Welcome to the Remote No Pressure Podcast. We're so excited that you chose to listen to us for another week, another episode. We're very excited that you're here. We're excited to be here. And we're very excited about the interview that we have. Now, here's the question you may be asking yourself. Jeff, why are you opening up the podcast with a song from Ryan Adams? Well, Ryan Adams wrote this song, New York, New York, and he recorded it actually just, the music video. If you YouTube the music video, he recorded it just a few days before 9/11, and in the background you can actually see the Twin Towers. And there's something about New York that's kind of magical. Some of you may have not been old enough to really know what was going on at 9/11, but you know it's important. Well, 9/11 was a huge deal, and in his music video you actually see the Twin Towers just a few days before they were knocked down. There's something magical about New York. I've never been there. So my experience with New York is 9/11, Home Alone 2, of course, in Central Park. Today's guest, Morgan Creel, is a young man, 17 years old, who lives there in New York. And unlike a lot of us who may be able to go to the river or to the salt, Morgan has created a fishery all of his own there in Central Park. As a matter of fact, they even did a write-up about Morgan in the New York Times. It's a great interview. Welcome to the podcast. Let's light the fire. Well, today on the Remote No Pressure Podcast, we have Morgan Creel with us from New York. Thank you very much for joining us, Morgan.
Thank you for having me.
Now, Joe DeMalderis, who was on our podcast early on, told me to reach out to you, said you'd be a very interesting person to talk to. And when I looked it up, I mean, yeah, you've got an interesting fishery. Can you were in the New York Times even talking about your fishing habits. Can you tell us a little bit about your fishery and where you do your everyday fishing?
Yeah, so I live in Manhattan, in the heart of New York City. And my main fishery, at least within the city limits, is in the freshwater ponds of the city parks, the public parks. I live closest to Central Park, so that's where I do primarily most of my fishing. It's about a 15-minute walk from my house to the nearest pond, but there's 5 ponds that we can fish throughout the entire length of the park, which is actually pretty large, despite the fact that it's in the middle of the city. We've got carp, largemouth, smallmouth, perch, crappie, bluegills, pumpkin seeds. And recently I've been venturing outside of Manhattan out to Queens, one of the outer boroughs, and trying to target northern snakehead, which is what that article you referenced was focused on.
How do you get from Manhattan to Queens?
So from my house, I hop on a train, which takes me down to Grand Central station area, Times Square area. If you know the city at all, that's kind of central hub of the whole transit system. So from there, I can get on another train, the 7 train, which takes me out essentially to where the Mets play. And that's where the snakehead lakes are.
And you said you haven't caught a snakehead yet.
I have not. I've seen a few come up, tail, gulp a little air. It's definitely difficult with the fly rod throughout the city, getting to areas where there's enough room to cast, getting access and avoiding people is always a challenge.
Let me ask you this question. When you're on the train from Manhattan to Queens, I'm assuming you have all of your gear on you. Do you have some interesting exchanges with people on the train?
Definitely. Especially, I do some, in the past especially, I did a lot of bait casts and style fishing for bass. And with those rods, I'd have rods that were not in cases or anything. Sometimes they're 7 feet long and I'm just holding them. And people would subconsciously grab them, thinking they were a subway pole. And those, I always had to get a little defensive because, you know, this is my gear. At the time I was 12 years old, you know, this was a lot. This was everything I had. There's a lot of curious people wondering where I go fishing, what I'm doing with the fishing rod. Obviously, there's people who don't love it being in the city. I get some glares, but no one's ever been really super aggressive to me on the subway, at least.
Now, you say you had to kind of defend yourself. I mean, you sound like someone from New York, so I'm assuming, you know, you just have to really stick up for yourself, even at a young age, because like you said, that's all you have. Can you tell us a little bit about how you got into fishing and then how that transitioned into fly fishing?
Yeah, so my first time fishing was actually within Central Park. We have a program here at one of the main ponds where they kind of try and promote fishing called the Harlem Mere, where on weekdays, if you have a valid driver's license, you can rent out a small cane pole and some bait for kids. And so that's how I first got started when I was around 5 or 6. My mom took me a few times, just as something fun to do. I was always interested in just being outside, and I always liked animals. Actually, I did that, probably rented those rods for about 2 years, never caught a fish. I'm still convinced, looking back on it, that the hooks they were giving me, and bait was corn. So I'm convinced the hooks they were giving me were far too big for anything that would eat corn to be able to get in their mouth. So I'm convinced it was rigged against me. But then I started getting a little more serious with fishing when I went to sleepaway camp at about the age of 10. We had a pond on the camp, and there were a few counselors that were able to teach me more about fishing. And then I came back to the city, but I still never really thought about the city as a place to go fishing until a few years later. I got introduced to some of the social media platforms, especially YouTube, and I started seeing people going fishing just all over the place. And I realized there's fish here, and why don't I try targeting them? So I did the spin fishing thing for a while, got really into bass fishing with artificials. And then just by chance, I went down to the Orvis store in New York City here with my father because he wanted to exchange a coat he had received for a different size. And I saw all the fly fishing stuff and I just thought it was interesting. And from there, it just bloomed. And that was only about, I'm going to say 4.5, 5 years ago. So not too long, but I've really taken a liking to it. Eventually I was able to get my father into it, which has definitely expanded the amount of fishing opportunities I have.
And now you currently work at that Orvis store, am I correct?
I do. Yeah. I'm a part-time employee there, mostly on the weekend, but some in the summer as well.
That's great. That's great. And then, you know, I read your bio and it talked about how you received your first fly rod for Hanukkah. Am I right?
Yeah. So I was at the store and I was like, this is so cool. I talked to the fishing manager there, Rob Ceccarini, for probably about an hour that day. And then I guess my dad saw my interest and a few weeks later, that was wrapped up in the house.
What was it like the first time you went fly fishing in Central Park?
Yeah. I don't think I caught anything. it probably took me 2 or 3 times to get the casting down. It was, I did it through video. My father got me a DVD to try and learn casting. And I also looked on the internet. So I got it down a little bit. I caught a few bluegills and then I ended up taking the free classes at the Orvis store. And that kind of stepped my game up a little bit. And then from there, I was able to catch fish more successfully and start targeting bass and crappie a little bit more. But for the first few years, there was definitely a big learning curve. And going from the spin fishing in those areas, I had some idea of the way the ponds were laid out and where the fish liked to hang out. The issue I was finding was the places where I was catching all my fish, I could no longer get to with the fly rod, especially with my limited skills. There's a lot of pressure in the ponds because there's a surprising amount of fishermen here in the city, and we're all targeting the small population of fish in these few little bodies of water. So you really have to get up under trees, into the weeds, largemouth especially. You kind of got to hit them on the head. It's tough with a 7.5-foot, 4-weight fly rod to make a 20-foot cast underneath a lay down when you're first starting out.
I can only imagine. And I can also, I didn't even think about that, but I'm sure those fish have, they're under a lot of pressure. I mean, they've probably been caught more than once, all of the fish.
Yeah, definitely. Now that I've more recently been carp fishing a lot in the last few years, and I've caught the same fish multiple times. I've had buddies who have caught fish that I've later caught. Just by comparing pictures, we see that, you know, a lot of people are catching those same couple of fish.
Wow. Wow. Now, how did you end up in the New York Times?
Yeah, so that's actually a really funny story. Again, it was all just a coincidence, much like my entrance into fly fishing. So we have a fishing club here in the city called the Brooklyn Fishing Club. It's actually a really diverse group in terms of fishing styles, a lot of saltwater guys, but about a year and a half ago, I first joined the club, you know, just looking to kind of build my fishing community and find some more people to fish with. And they were having a meeting, and there was a reporter there who was interviewing people about kind of just a little tiny piece about fishing in the city that ended up going into the New York Magazine. His name is Alex Spadicool. And, you know, I exchanged info with him. I went fishing with him a couple times just as friends. And then I invited him to do the snakehead thing with me just as a friend. You know, I just wanted someone to go out there with. I thought it was interesting. He was starting to get more into fishing, so I thought it'd be a fun thing for him to do. And I had no intent of it turning into anything, any piece. I just wanted to go fishing with a buddy. and then he was like, hold on, this sounds really cool. Let me propose this to my editor. And from there, it kind of took on a life of its own. And it just became something that, you know, I never thought of it as anything kind of crazy. It was just me going to try and catch a new fish. But I guess to him and to those, especially people who have never fished before or who don't fish in the city, I can see the appeal and the interest in it.
Yeah, it's a fascinating story. I think, like you said, I mean, I've never been to New York City. So for me, Morgan, it was like, wow, when I think New York City, you know, I was 21 years old when 9/11 happened. So, you know, when I think New York City, I think of 9/11, obviously, and the things that I saw that day that I will never forget. And I think about, you know, the ball dropping on New Year's Eve, and that's about it. You know, I don't think of it as like a great fishery. Now, we had Danny Scarborough here, who was on the horn with us a couple episodes ago, and he's basically, with a few other people, have created fisheries inside of Houston, Texas, you know, inside the ditches, inside the bayous. And I think it's fascinating that I love to see people creating fisheries or adapting to the fisheries that they have and taking advantage of that. And I think that is fascinating. I think a lot of our listeners who've never been to New York City would definitely find that interesting. You know, too, when I think Central Park, I think Home Alone 2, Lost in New York, you know, which is probably stupid and naive. But I mean, let's be honest. I mean, I haven't had a lot of exposure to that.
Yeah, well, even outside of kind of my main fishery, those freshwater ponds, New York itself, we have arguably one of the best saltwater fisheries on the eastern seaboard. Manhattan is an island, and we're surrounded by two parts that lead up, the East River and the Hudson River, both of which feed up into the main branch of the Hudson River. And every single spring, we have a large body of stripers that move up the river to spawn. So we have, it's difficult to do, especially with fly rods for sure. We have one of the, probably the biggest, one of the main concentrations of fish on the East Coast that move right around the island here.
So do you?
It's unexpected, but they're here.
Do you fish for striper then when they come in, Morgan?
I do.
Okay.
It's not as common for me. It's with a fly rod, you're limited to essentially piers. There's not many beaches within the central city area. You kind of have to move out into Staten Island, into Jersey, onto Long Island, where I do go. But the closest thing to home for me, the easiest to access, the one I have the most familiarity with is freshwater.
Now, do anyone take boats out into the river to fly fish for them? Is that like a thing? Or
guys definitely take boats off. They move out of the river for the most part, out of the main river here. They'll move out into the bay, or they'll go out onto the beachfronts where there's the fish are more, they're more spread out a little bit. And they'll come up to the surface some more because there's not as strong of a current ripping.
Now, with your bio and the information that you sent over to us, you also talk about fishing in New York State, like up in the Catskills with your father. Am I right?
Mm-hmm.
How did you – normally when I talk to people, Morgan, it's their dad that got them into it, not the kid that got the dad into it. So how did you get your dad to go out with you?
The way he describes it is essentially he realized he was driving me to go fishing and he was just sitting in the car doing nothing or walking around. And he was like, you know what? This is boring for me. Why don't I try this?
Uh-huh.
And so then he started fly fishing. He gave it a shot. And then we went out west for a few days and we were able to fish, I'm trying to think now. It was northeastern Utah, which was a really, really great trip. And that kind of cemented his interest in fishing. He's still pretty much trout exclusive, though. He's starting to have interest in other things, but trout is really his main interest. And that's where his he doesn't come fishing with me in the park is essentially how I'm going to put it.
Mm-hmm. Right. I've talked to a lot of people, Morgan, especially the younger groups, because before the internet, you know, I mean, it was dry flies and trout. I mean, that's what you fly fish for. But now the tides are changing. I mean, you have people going for carp, pike. I mean, what are you seeing? I mean, you're there in the fly shop at Orvis. What are some of the trends? What are some of those things that you're seeing within fly fishing?
Yeah, so we're pretty close to some great trout fisheries. Joe DeMalderis, who you mentioned, mm-hmm. he's only about a 2-hour drive from central Manhattan. So the majority of our fly fishing base here in the city is still trout guys who are driving up to the Catskills, driving up to some of the reservoir outlets to fish. But we have a lot of saltwater guys here, especially those who are heading farther out east onto Long Island towards Montauk. But the whole warm water city scene is still kind of a placeholder. It's what you do when you can't get out of the city. I'd like to see that change because I think it's all a ton of fun. I don't think it all should be just waiting until you can leave, waiting until you go trout fishing. You know, we have fisheries here in the city that you can enjoy that you should be excited about.
That's awesome. Yeah. I mean, it's just interesting to hear all the different species, beside trout that people are catching these days, you know, especially on Instagram. I mean, there's so many different species that people are catching on the fly now. It's just fascinating to see that. Now we have a few.
Yeah,
more.
I think,
go ahead.
I think we're at the point now where any fish especially in freshwater, any fish you can catch on artificials, I think we're at the point now where you have a reasonable chance of targeting it with a fly rod. Line design and fly design and all the new artificial materials we have coming out, all the new synthetics, I think it's taking it to the point where we can pretty much target any fish that spin, bait, lure guys can.
I agree with you 100%, Morgan. It seems like that's where we're headed. It's, you know, we can target pretty much any fish we want. Now to get on to another subject, Morgan, you sent over an essay. And one of the things that you talked in there is talking about mousing. How did you discover your passion for mousing for trout?
Yeah. So mousing came through the internet. It came through the hook shots, series through Field and Stream. Joe DeMalderis again was the one featured on that episode. And I just, you know, I was really intrigued by it. I saw the fly patterns online. It's something I started doing for largemouth. I just started fishing topwater patterns, and I wanted something other than a popper, something a little more subtle. And I had a lot of success with it, especially on these pressured fish here in the city. You don't always need the most obvious thing. And we do have a lot of rats and mice that I see all the time walking around the edges of the pond. So it was kind of just a natural thing for me. And then I guess the first time I targeted trout with the mouse was two summers ago up in Maine. And I was up there with a bunch of friends on, as you probably saw in my blog, in my little bio piece there, a Lillard fly fishing trip. Essentially like a teen tour, but fly fishing and camping oriented. And we fished for pretty much 2 weeks up in Maine. And I struggled the whole time to catch fish on the mouse. I was really determined to do it. And then I think the second to last day of fishing we had, I caught one of the bigger brookies of the trip. I think it was about 18 inches, which isn't anything crazy when in the grand scope of brook trout. But for a bunch of kids who were just tooling around in Maine, that fish eating the way it did, it changed everything for me. The amount of aggression that it hit with, I didn't want to do anything else. That's what I did for the next probably day and a half straight that I had left of fishing. I did not put it down. And then since then, that's just what I've been doing. I was fortunate enough this past summer to get to do a float trip with Joe DeMalderis and Joe Cermelli, the creator of Hookshots, both of whom, those guys are essentially what got me into it. And actually bringing it all full circle, it was on that float trip that I first got interested in the snakeheads, because Joe Cermelli is really into them and he was kind of talking about them.
Does he catch the snakehead on a mouse, or what does he fish for snakehead?
He's using gear primarily for them. I know Joe D went down with him this past summer and got one on the fly. The issue, they live in the slop. So you have to have something that's weedless. Traditional trout mouse patterns won't work. Hook point up is something I found that's really key. Having the hook point ride in the air rather than facing down.
Right. Yeah. That's one of the quotes from your blog was, I no longer picture a dirty disease infested underground terror. I think of a large mass of foam, fur, and feathers tied on a hook for a small shark. Like, that's such a great quote, and well done on that. So, reading further down, there's something else you said, that, you know, when you talk about mousing, one of the quotes that I really appreciated was, you said, "I don't mind the failures or the missed opportunities. I enjoy the process, the challenge, and the time spent in nature." Can you tell us a little bit about that? I mean, it says it all allows me to reflect, relax, and occasionally bask in the presence of a beautiful creature. Can you tell us a little bit about that, about your philosophical approach to fly fishing and why you think you do what you do?
Yeah. For me, it's gotten to the point now. I know I haven't been doing it too long, but I've gotten to the point where, you know, I have a pretty good handle on how to catch, you know, if I want to catch fish any size, if I want to catch a few in a day, I can. I like the challenge. Just going out and catching fish isn't the whole experience. It's catching a fish is so much more rewarding when you've worked for it, when you've done the research for hours at home, you spent time designing flies or tweaking already existing fly patterns for that specific scenario. When you dream about that fish ahead of time, or when you lose a few fish before you get to that point, a good example for me was pike fishing. It took me 2 years from the time I hooked my first pike to where I actually landed my first pike. I lost 4 in that time period. Granted, I didn't have the opportunity to do it all that much. And all of those fish that I hooked, I wasn't necessarily using the right setup. But it was just the fact that I'd gotten so close and I had almost touched that fish. I'd been there. I'd been around it. And I couldn't succeed. That's what kept me going back. That's what made that catch so much more rewarding, what made the journey to that point so rewarding. And also for me, the whole nature aspect, I live in the biggest city in the country. I'm still in high school. It's stressful. The whole college process, getting good grades, worrying about just living my life, essentially. It can get to you sometimes. And I think for a lot of people as adults, it's the same way. The aspect of being in nature, whether it's fly fishing, whether it's hiking, whether it's camping, it's an escape. It gives you something else to think about. Your mind, it kind of goes blank. When I was thinking about, you know, the kinds of things you might ask me on the podcast, I started thinking about what I think about while I'm fishing, and I realized I don't really think about too much. You know, I think about the fishing itself, what fly am I going to tie on, how am I doing this drift, but in the time in between, thinking back on it, my mind's just blank, and I realized that when I'm in school, when I'm doing work, things like that, it's always thinking about going fishing, about those times when my mind will be blank, when I just kind of live in that moment and don't worry about everything around me.
Where are you going to college? Have you decided?
I don't know yet. I've been fortunate enough. I've gotten in to a few schools, so I don't have to be too worried, but I'm in no rush to decide. So I'm just going to wait and hear from everywhere I applied.
Good for you. Well, I think, you know, one of the things I take away from our conversation was the quote, "I don't mind the failures or the missed opportunities, but you enjoy the process." And I think that's really just a good way to approach life, is because we're going to fail, you know, and we're going to miss opportunities because, you know, I'm a little older than you, Morgan. How old are you, Morgan?
I'm 17 right now.
You're 17, right? And so, you know, talking to you, I think back, you know, that's 20 years ago. I was 17. How many opportunities I've missed or how many things I've failed at, but it's really the journey and enjoying the process and taking that approach to life that I think it's going to be very rewarding to you. And I just love your attitude, Morgan. So thank you very much for spending some time with us. If someone wanted to get a hold of you, do you have a blog or an Instagram? Can you tell us where they could see some of your stuff, Morgan?
Yeah, so the best place would probably be through my Instagram, which is MorganYCFish, or call the Orvis shop on Sundays here in the city.
Have you ever had an altercation with someone there in Central Park that kind of got out of hand?
Actually, definitely. So of my time fishing in Central Park, I would say those are some of the more memorable occurrences. the times when I've gotten into arguments with people about whether it be the ethicality of fishing in the first place or just the legality of me being allowed to fish there specifically. One pond in particular comes to mind where it's kind of debated whether or not fishing is allowed there. Essentially, the state DEC, the Department of Environmental Conservation, says that fishing is allowed within that pond. The private organization, the Central Park Conservancy that manages Central Park, says fishing is not allowed there. But then New York City Parks Department, which is kind of in between the two, does not give a ruling at all. So everybody's kind of in class with each other. And there aren't that many DEC officers in the city. So typically the people I'll run into while I'm fishing are Central Park Conservancy employees. Oftentimes it's tour guides, information people, or landscapers, people cleaning up trash, things like that. And they will tell me I'm not allowed to fish there. I've had Central Park Conservancy employees as well as private citizens threatened to or actually go through with calling the police because they're convinced that I'm not allowed to fish in a certain area, or they're convinced that the fishing practices I'm using are not allowed. Every single time, the police are very confused about what's happening because it's not an actual crime. So they never respond to anything. but most of the time I try to just argue my point, and if I realize I'm not getting anywhere, I'll just walk away. You know, I can always circle back around to that fishing spot or just come back another day. It's really not worth it to get into a whole big thing with somebody.
That's just less time you're fishing, right?
Exactly. You know, it's nice to try and win the argument, but in the end, there's no winning.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Well, cool, man. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Yeah, of course.
Well, thank you, everyone, for listening to another episode of the Remote No Pressure podcast. Be sure to check out Morgan's article in the New York Times at our website at remotenopressure.com. Be sure, you know, if you like the episode, if you like the podcast, be sure to go to your format, or the iTunes or Stitcher or whatever, and leave us a review. It helps tremendously. And until next time, go fishing. The law won't play any games with me anymore like it did before. The world won't wait, so I better shake that thing right out.